At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm N7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another fun and action-packed, and the full house is here for this week of the Mass Effect Lorecast because it is our end of August patron chat, and Genesis, we've got 7 patrons joining us. We've got 9 people in this call total.
Yeah, we've got a full house tonight, and I'm very excited about that. Hello, hello, and welcome in.
I am as well. And Genesis, you just finished a panel at PAX West. I was there.
Yes, our PAX West panel went extremely well. We were very excited to talk about the history of the decades of digital love, and we had a really great turnout. It was 17 plus at 9 p.m. on a Friday night, so we weren't sure if a lot of people were going to show up. But I think like half the theater was there, and that made us really, really happy.
Yes, that was pretty awesome. Anywho, I'm going to go around the horn and allow all of our friends and patrons here to introduce themselves. And I'm going to do something a little bit different off the cuff today. Why don't I get each of you to tell me what you last ate? And don't lie about it. I'll know if you're lying. All right, so we'll start here in my top left. We've got Karina. Karina, you're new. Welcome in. And what did you last eat?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I was just at my nephew's birthday, so I'm eating right now chocolate cake.
Oh.
And it's like 10 p.m. for me right now because I'm in Quebec City, Canada.
Oh, nice, nice. Chocolate cake. Delicious. All right. I know my wife is now, she's in chat. My wife is definitely going to message me and say, hey, you should go get us some chocolate cake. Genesis, I didn't ask what you last ate. What did you eat?
Technically, it was just a little snack of a Bobo's chocolate chip bar.
Okay.
It's like a banana nut bread with chocolate chips.
Ooh, banana bread in the lore cast, dude? Hell yeah. All right. The patron formerly known as Psyche, now known as Mitch. Mitch, welcome back. And what did you last eat?
Hey, it's good to be back. I just had some Pad CU from a really great place down here in Norman.
Nice. Love Thai food. All right. And Jeffrey, how are you doing? What did you last have to eat?
Well, hey, doing pretty well, and there's a great sushi joint across the street from the hotel I'm at that's where I had dinner, and that was the last thing I ate. So, sushi.
Nice. Retrobot, how are you doing? What'd you have to eat?
Doing good. Glad this is one of the first times I've actually been early to the Lorecast past couple months, which is nice. I had steak and potatoes before joining the call.
There you go. Something to stick to your ribs. All right. Big Bills, what did you have to eat?
This is going to sound really lame. Since scotch doesn't count as food, it was slices of roast beef with sliced cheese as a snack.
I can imagine you standing by the fridge with the fridge door open.
100%. I had I had some really good roast beef and I had some sliced cheese and I was like, I just need a snack. I'm way too hungry from today.
That's a kids won't get out of my hair meal. That's what that is. All right. And Andrew, how's it going? Good to see you again. And what did you last have to eat?
That's good to be back. I didn't lose power this time. We made s'mores before bed with my kids in the backyard today. So I had more s'mores than I needed.
Okay, now I'm going to get another follow-up text from my wife, who has a little bit of a sweet tooth, but that sounds amazing. It is definitely still s'mores season. And Magister DeVita, how's it going? What did you have to eat?
Oh, just had a bit of roast beef, rice, and corn. Some cornbread was it. That's a home-cooked meal.
Oh, hell yeah. There we go. I love that one. And for me, I had chicken tikka masala, which is kind of generous to call it that because I cooked it. It was lazy. But that's what I had time to cook. So with that, let's get started with the rest of our show. If you're listening to this after the fact, then you've already read the title, so you already know what we're here to talk about. And it's if you could change one thing about Mass Effect, what would it be? And I love that this question is so open-ended. Because it can be including something, it can be taking something away, it can be, altering something that's already in the game, or perhaps bringing in something from a different fictional series. So I'm very happy to see where we take this conversation. I will go in backward order now to go ahead and introduce this topic. Magister, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you would change about the Mass Effect series?
Okay. Actually, only just saw the topic was before I came on here. So I guess if I were to just pop it off, I would want to change up the romance in the game. I would love for it to have the accumulation scene to be earlier on, so that it feels like there's more going on to the relationship than just leading up to wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, or sir.
Bam is right, baby.
Yeah, that would be the main thing. Like having it more spread out, introducing more layers to it, probably the best thing there. Also more variations in there as well.
I love that answer. I know Genesis does too. And now I'm starting to wonder whether you were actually secretly at that panel last night at PAX. Genesis, I know that you wanted to chime in here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I totally would have noticed if Magister was there. There would have been screaming and big hugs all around if that had happened. But I fully agree with that. I have always disliked it that in a lot of game series, not only Mass Effect alone, but the fact that the romance culmination scene happens at the end of the game. And it makes it feel like I've played through all of this game. I have fallen in love with the character and my prize at the end is the physical activity. It's like, this is now, yay, you've completed the romance path. Here's your trophy at the end. You get to bang. And that always has just felt like a little jilted and not the right timing for it. And the timing aspect is also a big part of it too. I find it extremely dangerous to be romancing Tally and having the night before the suicide mission is when you guys decide to test out a theory if she's going to be able to survive or not. Yes, so the night before the suicide mission, let's see if we can kill you a day early, Tally. That sounds great. So I have a lot of thoughts about when a physical culmination scene should happen in the course of a video game.
And you and I have talked about that a lot, not just with Mass Effect, because, of course, I wanted there to be more what you call mundane moments in the Two Girls, One Ship podcast, more mundane moments of romance where, you know, you see maybe you and Tally are playing cards in the lounge on the ship, right? That kind of thing that we got a little bit of in the Citadel DLC because it was a little bit of fan service. Okay, it was all fan service. But, you know, with Pan Am in Cyberpunk, I don't need to rehash that rant. If you want to hear me go on that rant, go listen to the Pan Am episode of Two Girls, One Chip. But I want to open this topic up to the rest of our patrons. If you could change the Mass Effect romances to include an earlier, quote-unquote, culmination scene so that you get more development after that, would you do it, or why or why not? And whoever wants to go first can just kind of chime in.
I think it depends on the person and who you're romancing. Like, Callie, yeah, that should have been tried sooner. If you, like, romance Miranda and Emmy too, I feel like that would be more of a hate situation. So if you got it in the middle, that'd be more like, hey, we don't actually like each other. It's more like when you get it with Jack early. So yeah, I think it just depends on the person.
That's fair.
How guarded they are.
That's more than fair, especially if you're just meeting them. Like, you know, it's different if you have Tally in Mass Effect 2 because you already had Mass Effect 1 to develop that friendship with Tally. So yeah, yeah, I get where you're coming from with that. All right, what someone else? What do you think about keeping the romances early?
I want to drag my buddy Scott into this and his first playthrough in ME2 in my parents' basement where he romanced Tally. It did not go well for him, and it exactly as Genesis had said. So, Mr. Scott, please, the floor.
Oh, man, it was fine. Like, nobody survived the suicide mission, but the mission got done. So that's all that mattered, right? Mission accomplished. Like,
you're a liability to the department. Turn in your badge.
You know, it's when your friend says play this game but doesn't warn you about anything, it's his fault. So that's what do you want me to do?
I know how that conversation went. You got to play this game, dude. I don't know. You can bang aliens. I'm in.
I'm in. Yeah, I think that's the thing, though, about, like, the earlier is, like, when you get the fun banter then between them that, like, is that playful relationship aspect. I think that's one of the best parts when you romance Tally and she doesn't die and you're on the Geth dreadnought, like, in ME3, and you're, like, flirting, like, while you're, like, boarding the ship and stuff. It's hilarious. Like, and so I wish that was part of the earlier romances. It's, like, you know, there's, like, there could be jokes about it and stuff. So, you know. Like, we make jokes on this podcast about slamming asteroids.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So, all right. I think I heard another person who wanted to chime in. Was it you, Retrobot?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, in terms of time frame within universe, it's kind of hard. Because, like, the games, like, take place over, like, a couple months at most. So it's sort of hard to fit in, like, oh, in 2 months, they developed like a super committed relationship and they're talking about what they're doing after the war and everything like that.
And that's a great point. That's a great point as well, because each of the games, it doesn't take, you know, an incredibly long period of time during the game itself. All right, Mitch, you wanted to chime in with something.
Yeah. But to also bring on to Retrobot's idea, like, you are in a condensed time frame, but you're also under extreme pressures. So, like, all those feelings get magnified. But I fully agree with the idea that the romances should have been done with more thought in them, more drawn out, so that we can get more lore out of it, particularly with Quarians and Turians and the like.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think part of what would have made it better is if there was more romance interactions after that. And I know that that night leads directly into the suicide mission and into endgame moments. But if there was something even in part of the conversations, like, Tally, I want you to lead this second team. And she comes back with, like, yeah, you know, like, you know, I'll miss you. Good luck. I love you. I'm on this. Something along those lines. Or, you know, I send Garrus, like if Garrus said, I don't want to go lead this second mission. I want to be at your side, my love. Like, something like that, that would have added into, just because this culmination scene happened, we're still in a relationship after this. But there's nothing really, unless you count the little moment, the silent, no dialogue moments you can have after the game ends. And yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of those.
Yeah, fair. Karina, I want to toss it over to you. What do you think about putting the romance scenes a little bit earlier in the game so you could get more development out of the character afterward?
Yeah, I would have liked to, like Genesis said, to have maybe romance interactions in the game. And I think that the romance is so isolated. It's like a part of the story there, and then after that, it's, we don't talk about it anymore. It doesn't change really the decisions that you make or the choices, like Genesis said. And you talk about mundane moments, so you just have to think about the DLC, the party, Citadel DLC. We liked it all so much because it was full of mundane moments like that. It's a party, and it's like a normal life. So I would have liked to have these little bits of normal life in the romance.
Yeah, that would have been a very welcome change. And you bring up a great point that the narratives for the romances are a little siloed away from the main story, where they really could have woven them into the main story a little better. One of my favorite mods or even ideas, theories about how Mass Effect 3 goes is if you had the Vermeier survivor or the person who died on Vermeier show up as Kai Lang instead. And especially because a lot of you know that one of my favorite styles of playthrough is the tragic romance playthrough with Ashley, where you romance Ashley, or at least you're trying to, and then she dies on Vermeier. So how gut-wrenching would that be if you had romanced, or if you were going to romance Ashley, if you were going to romance Caden, and then they show up again as this Cerberus zombie, right, on Thessia? It would probably kill you. So, yeah, I love that point. But let's jump over to the next patron and what they would change about Mass Effect. I'm going to toss it over to you, Andrew. What is the one thing you would change about Mass Effect that can be including something, nixing something, just changing something that's already there?
I think if I could change anything, what I would like to include is, you know, so Shepard is an officer in the Alliance military, and I wish at some point in the game you could utilize that to like call in resources and like help you out. Like you get to go help out like different Alliance troops. And I know that you're a Spectre and an N7, so you're supposed to be able to take care of everything on your own. But I think it'd be really cool if Hackett would give you something and it'd be like, one time, you can call in support one time. And then you as the player could like make that determination in game, like I need some fighters or a frigate or something else to get someone off of you. And I think, you know, we're in this huge military apparatus and we're not like super far up the chain, but we're not super far down the chain. We're kind of in a good middle spot. Like, shouldn't we be able to call in some kind of resources or utilize networks and different things beyond just here's a ship, here's a few soldiers, and we'll see you when we see you? Like, I think I would like to add that into the game.
Yeah, even if it's just close air support from the Normandy, right? Or Cortez being able to do it on command. And I see where you're saying, not just something that's baked into the narrative as like it always happens at this point kind of thing, but rather something more like a kill streak in Call of Duty, right, where you just kind of activate it and it happens. So that's a really cool idea about, and it being a one-time use and then it's gone. So you could really strategize your playthroughs that way. And it would have been, and just to add on to that, be probably pretty cool to unlock further ones, the more war assets you unlock. That would have been cool. But I want to open this up. Genesis, I think you had something that you wanted to chime in about with this.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I also know the way that you and I play, and we would hold on to that asset and that resource and then get all the way to the end of the game. And then they're going to be like, no, you can't call in reinforcements to fight Sovereign. We're already here. And then we're like, damn it. We went the whole game saving it for the big boss and we didn't get to use it.
Or counterpoint, it allows you to call in everything at once and then you punish your CPU. That would be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Let's set the computers on fire. That'd be fun.
Frame rate drops to 2. All right, let's open it up. What other thoughts are you guys having about being able to kind of call in different assistance from the Alliance at different points throughout the game?
I don't know how many of you guys have played on Legendary mode or if everyone has, but I know the harder the difficulty, the harder it is to find ammunition. So being able to call in like a supply drop or something like that, like you said, Call of Duty style would be a game changer on the harder difficulties. So I like this idea a lot. I totally be down for adding something like a supply drop or something like that. Cause there's been times where I'm down to just my pistol and which is doing absolutely nothing against these big enemies. So supply drop would be epic.
Right on. Yeah. I was thinking about air support. You bring in supply drop, and there's tons of other different support things that you could use with this kind of ability. Anyone else have thoughts on this particular change to the Mass Effect series?
Yeah, I was just picturing the whole time, like, James coming down in, like, a drop ship with a bunch of, like, Alliance Marines just out of nowhere, and them just coming in, like, big machine guns just firing everywhere.
That'd be dope, yeah. Then they bounce.
So along those lines, I was going to say, if you have perfect war assets, like you max out the war assets for the end mission, just a Halo Spartan drop in the last little bit. Throw that in.
Hell yeah. Or artillery. That would have been cool during the final Earth push, right?
Little Fallout mini nukes.
Just call over your comm. Joker, bring in the shock and awe.
You know, as soon as you said calling in James as the reinforcement, it then put into my mind of being able to, and again, a one shot of being able to call upon each of the squaddies for a quick backup support at any point. You know, maybe you haven't taken Zaid out on this mission, but you just want the extra firepower and be like, hey, Zaid, can you support in this moment? And then you see him drop in from, you know, a secondary ship or something along those lines, or calling in Javik for a little bit of backup in 3. I think that would be really cool. Each squad mate could be called in for backup.
I'm imagining like when they enter into the game, right, after you've called them in, each of them have like an anime Japanese fighter game like intro. Like as soon as they come in, Garrus comes in, Garrison. That'd be amazing.
I want theme music playing WWE style.
Oh my god,
coming down the ramp,
Krogan airdrop.
Yes,
there we go. That'd be dope. All right, anyone else? All right, seeing no objections, let's jump over to you, Big Bills. What would you change about the Mass Effect series? Be it include something, take something away, change it?
Mass Effect 3, getting rid of the heavy weapons and then not giving me enough heavy weapon ammo for the little mini nuke gun in ME2. Like, if you get all the heavy weapon ammo, you get what, 3 shots of that gun the entire game? 4 maybe? Like I want to use that every mission at least twice.
Yeah, there's some side missions, at least one side mission where it's kind of like necessary to max it out. I'm thinking of the Ymir mechs where you got to save all the boxes and the packages. I don't think that you can finish that and save all the crates without using the cane. And
oh, I have to.
God, I
100% have to use the cane. That or just give me the BFG from Doom. One of the two. Either give me heavy ammo or give me an unlimited BFG and I'm good.
Yes, I am in full agreement there. More cane shots. I need more cane. All right. What does everyone else think about including more heavy weapon ammo in Mass Effect 2?
That seems like a like a no-brainer. It's almost like, how did that, like, such a strict limit get through quality control? I mean, I understand challenge versus, but if I don't do it just right, I don't, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like one of those things that, you know, that they should have pushed back on whoever was arguing for balance and just said, look, we got to go with the rule of cool here. This is, you know, if someone wants to lean on this to make their playthrough a little easier, by God, let them. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's not like we're trying to make a FromSoft game here. So, all right. Anyone else on the extra heavy weapon ammo in Mass Effect 2? Or maybe you're cool with the way that it was.
I just agree with a Will. I'm sorry. Is it Will? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Retrobot, looked like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, maybe it could be an unlockable skill on one of the skill trees that you could sacrifice heat clips from, like, your main weapon to be used for your heavy weapon. Like, if you're, like, playing as a soldier, you could you know how to jerry-rig your heat clips to go with your, like, heavy weapon or whatever. So you can use your heavy weapon more, but you're sacrificing rounds from your main weapon.
Oh, that could be cool, especially if it was like some kind of research unlock through Morden's terminal over there, maybe like a clip compiler or something like that. Or if it's an attachment on your, or a specific bonus to a set of armor, that'd be cool. Love that. I feel like that bonus would be good for the Terminus set, Terminus armor, which just looks so amazing. Every playthrough. Love the Terminus armor. All right. Anyone else have thoughts on this one? All right. Let's go over to you, Retrobot. And I want to hear what you would change about the series.
So I would probably either like rework or just completely remove Metagel. Because I feel like it's just like, we have a series that explains basically everything, but then they're like, this is Metagel. It exists. It works. That's about it. They're like, it's a gel, but it's also a salve. But it's also a clotting agent.
It is kind of a catch-all. However, there is a considerable amount of lore behind Metagel, and I do have to give the developers credit there.
It's like so over the place, though. It's like it's just crazy with all it can and can't do. Like, it seals against infections, but like that doesn't make sense. If they get shot in the first place, that infection's already going to be there, so it's not going to stop anything. Then they're like, oh, specialized strain, they can use it to treat poison or whatever. That's weird. Then like there's characters that imply that you can overdose on it, which is weird. Which I'm like, are there Batarians somewhere abusing Metagel to get high? Like, are they K-holing themselves with Metagel? Like, what's going on with that?
It would be the Batarians, too, because they can't get access to any other drugs.
Yeah,
they're the alcoholic Batarians are, like, taking swigs off of the isopropyl and the mouthwash. That's where the Batarians are at. All right. I like that. I like that criticism of Metagel being just simply too overpowered and too much of a solves all, you know. What does everyone else think about Metagel? Would you be cool with taking it out of the game or just replacing it entirely?
I don't know. I've been gaming for so long that walking by a first aid kit heals all my wounds that I'm pretty used to the fact that Metagel is just going to cure everything.
Fair.
I'd say it depends on your difficulty level.
That's a great point.
I would say, like, if you're like one of the, you know, the two lower difficulties, let Metagel do its thing. If you're like the third difficulty, like, make it a little more challenging. If you are on legendary, Metagel doesn't exist. Good luck. Get shot in the, like, did anyone ever play the original Operation Flashpoint on the computer back in the day? So in that game, if you got shot in the leg and your medic was dead, you had to crawl the whole rest of the mission.
This reminds me of a game called DayZ. I will not go on a tangent about this one, but if you get shot in the leg with a high enough caliber, your leg breaks. And then there's no medical fixes all. You got to brace your leg, you know, bandage your cuts, that kind of thing. It's very technical. Now, where I thought you were going with the difficulty link to that, I thought you were actually going to say the opposite. I thought you were going to say that on easier level difficulties, there is none. There is no metagel because they already do low damage to you. So you could just take cover until you regain health. Whereas on the higher level difficulties, you would kind of need that little handicap there to make it bearable. With the
be a masochist.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think anyone's playing Insanity and thinking this isn't fair. Good point. All right, anyone else have thoughts on the metagel?
No, I was going to go along the same lines of handicap the metagel. Don't take it out entirely when you get to the harder difficulties, but handicap it when you get to the harder difficulties. Like, instead of getting full health back, you only get maybe two or three bars of health back with a metagel application. So you're using more of it to get more health back. So you still have it, but it's not a catch-all like it was in a lower difficulty or what it is right now. And I mean, that was something that would make Legendary still palatable, but also more challenging.
You guys want to hear something a little bit embarrassing? It took until like last year for me to realize that Mass Effect 2 had metagel that could heal you in it. Like, I'm not joking with you. I thought the Unity was only if a squad mate fell. Like, if a squad mate got knocked out, that's when you used Unity and the metagel. Because, and I wasn't using it besides that. And I was like, damn, this game is hard. Like, why is this game so much harder than all the rest? And then, like, eventually I just hit it. And I'm like, oh, that healed me. Wow. I've been playing this game for over 10 years. Didn't know that.
It makes you feel better. I thought the same thing until Legendary came out.
Thank you. It does make me feel better. Well, and you too, Karina?
It's because they used between 1 and 2. Unity was your revive, and then metagel was separate. And then 2, they just threw them both together but called it Unity. And it's like, so does it, what does it do? Does both? That's not very clear.
Yeah. And in Mass Effect 2, in the power wheel, they had the whole thing where they would kind of cross out and make something red if it didn't fit the situation you were in. But that isn't always foolproof, I've noticed. Like, sometimes there are powers you can still use and they will have an effect. It's just that they're not ideal for that situation. So I noticed the Unity is often crossed out, right, if everyone's still standing. Okay. But I'm dying. Does that matter? No, you're fine. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, guys, we got to get over to the mid break, and thank you. And then we will come back and hear the rest of the patrons and what they would change about the Mass Effect series. So let's go.
We have, beef. We have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, and here we are in the middle of the show where we read out your 5-star reviews that you've left us on Apple Podcasts, Audible, any podcatcher you listen to, or Spotify. And speaking of Spotify, Genesis, it looks like we got a brand new comment from someone on Spotify in our most recent episode from Jebiniho. I hope I'm saying that name correctly. Please forgive me if I'm not. It says, "Hey guys, been listening from day one and have never been able to comment. You got me into the games. Never would have met Tally if not for you." Oh my gosh. Genesis, we got someone into these games.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, that's very interesting to pick up a Mass Effect lore cast and know nothing about the games even, and to be playing it. That, I mean, they probably were a fan of Tom's other shows, heard him talking about it, and then found the lore cast through that. And now we have brought another hand touches the beacon.
One of us. All right. Well, thank you so much for the kind words. I'm so glad that you've joined our sci-fi RPG video game cult. And that is a reminder for everyone else that you can leave comments on Spotify episodes now. And we always love to read those, even if we're not reading them out here in the middle of the show. Genesis, I did not check Patreon today, but are you aware of, I believe we do have one new patron. We have two. I saw James is one of our new patrons. So thank you to James. And who were the other ones, or other one that you mentioned?
I saw Hostronaut, our space person that commented a couple of weeks ago, or left a review a couple of weeks ago, and Augustus Gloop.
Augustus Gloop. Oh, yes. My word. The Augustus Gloop?
I think so.
All right. Hide your chocolate. I like him, but hide your chocolate. All right. Well, thank you to our new patrons as well. Thank you to our tier 5 patrons. Actually, you know what? I always do the shout outs. You want to do the shout out this time, Genesis?
I can do that for sure. We have Butts, Tadega, Unfortunate Benefactor, William, Superfly 440, Retrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Curacy, and Ed Boy.
All right. So, with that, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Solarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
All right, here we are in the second half of the show, and I see that Day Zero in chat here has said, if I could change one thing, it would be making Adept viable, read fun, on Insanity in Mass Effect 2. Yeah, Adept is rough in Mass Effect 2, but you know what else is rough? Going from Vanguard in Mass Effect 1 to Sentinel in Mass Effect 2. Those are not at all the same playstyle, and if you try to play Sentinel like a Vanguard, you're going to get your teeth kicked in. I learned the hard way. All right, so why don't we go over to Jeff? What was your thing that you wanted to change about Mass Effect?
First of all, I'd like to say the name Butts makes me laugh every time I hear it. Having said that, though, the one thing I would change about at least the original trilogy would be the combat style. As you probably heard from the last patron chat we did, I do like Andromeda, and the thing I like most about Andromeda was the combat style, the being able to jump, first of all, and just being, you know, it's not a cover style system like the original trilogy was, or Gears of War is, or anything like that. You know, you're able to move around and jump around and not just hide in one place and shoot from cover and then pop out and shoot, hide, pop, shoot. You know, it's not so, it feels one-dimensional, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
Yes. Yeah, the Gears of War cover shooter style combat has not exactly aged well. It was so in vogue there for a while. But now when you go back and play the games, especially, I imagine, if you didn't play Mass Effect until after 2015, I bet that you probably found the combat to be pretty tiresome. Let's open that up for discussion. You know, Mass Effect's combat, do you believe it's aged well, or do you think that if you could change one thing, like Jeff says, would you change it to be a little bit more like Andromeda?
I think the jumping aspect of it, definitely. I kept hitting the space bar when I was first playing it, trying to figure out why Shepard wouldn't jump or like move around and go over the little hedges and ledges and whatnot. So that was really, really difficult to get used to playing an older game. But I could also see how putting the Andromeda combat style of switching things up so constantly wouldn't have really fit the character of Shepard. With Ryder, I feel like they're a little bit more fluid. They can definitely do a lot more when it comes to the combat aspects of changing things. But Shepard was already established in the military and therefore has like their quote play style or their lifestyle, the way that they have their combat. But yes, I definitely missed being able to jump over things.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite something going back to Mass Effect 1, right after having not played it for a while. You are, like, on a fixed track, basically. You're almost, like, two-dimensional. But, all right, what other thoughts about the Mass Effect combat style?
I just need an in-lore reason as to why Shepard doesn't have a jump pack like Ryder does in Andromeda. You're an N7, you should have a jump pack. That's what I need.
Fair. At least one when you're traversing planets, right? Yeah, I agree. Uncharted Worlds would have been a lot better with the jump pack. Maybe we'll get one. Maybe we'll get one the next game. Andrew, I saw that you unmuted. Did you want to comment here on the original trilogy combat?
Yeah, I think my biggest frustration with the original trilogy, the combat, the thing that could be good to like add into it would be better melee. Like, I felt like the melee was always like so frustrating. And so in Andromeda, I really love like not only the usability of melee, but I think also the customization of melee with the different weapons, and you can add things to the weapons and stuff like that. What am I doing? Using hand gestures. That was weird. And so like, I think, like that was something that I do like, yeah, I wish melee was more effective. Like, you know, like Bill was just saying about like Shepard having a jump pack cause he's an N7. I'm like, he's an N7. He should, if he punches someone, it should like hurt, you know? And instead it's just like, I mean, you get the Omniblade, I guess a little bit to kill Kai Lang, but like otherwise, you know, like, nothing. So
sure, I mean, if you're a Vanguard, you kind of have like a superhero punch that you can like launch people with, but I get your point. Yeah, it should, the melee was very one-dimensional and it did feel a little bit like an afterthought, so that would have been cool to kind of revamp there as well. What's something else that you guys would change about combat? I think for me, I would have to agree with Jeff that the cover based system is just, I'm not a huge fan.
I think something for her, in my mindset would be having the, what's the term? Just the effects of your abilities showing that much more. Like if you're a soldier, having that shield really power up, if you're a techie, seeing the orange glyphs and everything could pop up a lot more. Or if you're the biotic, seeing the vorpals around you that much more whenever you're doing whatever technique you're doing, or like you were saying, that super punch that you could do as a Vanguard. I just feel like it felt, well, it was a limitation of this time, of course, but just being able to see those effects of your abilities would have been that much more interesting to it. I don't mind the combat, but I just felt like Shepard didn't feel as powerful as they should have in a lot of times.
You know how dope it would be to have, like, let's say that you were an adept or some other biotic class, to have like biotic finisher moves on opponents who were like dazed or something like that. I'm thinking about combat, something along the lines of like Jedi Fallen Order or Jedi Survivor, where you can have those finisher moves if they were stunned or if they were, you know, incapacitated in some regard, and to be able to have some of those sweet choreographed animations with biotics or maybe tech or something like that. That'd be pretty cool, right?
Absolutely. That's definitely what I'm more so referring to. Just show me that Shepard, especially toward late game, show me that Shepard is the person who could hold off a whole Batarian blitz by themselves, not just throwing a singularity in the air.
Yes. Show me John Wick Shepard. That would have been amazing. Yeah. I mean, they did do a little bit of with that, but in cutscenes with squad mates like Thane. And so knowing a little bit about what went on behind the curtain during the OT production, I can almost say with certainty that this didn't make the cut because there was a limited budget, and that would have meant a lot more work for the cinematic design team in introducing, you know, these new custom tailored animations for that kind of thing. Although maybe we could see something like that in the next Mass Effect. All right. Any other thoughts on the combat of the original trilogy and changing it?
Yeah, I'd say they should add like some sort of stealth system. Like they gave you the silenced pistol in the DLC in 3 for the Citadel DLC, which was really cool. But I feel like, especially depending on your playstyle, you may prefer to take a lot more fights at like a slower pace while like methodically picking off the bad guys or whatever.
Yeah, it did kind of raise the question of why. why do we have a suppressed pistol, even though that thing punches hard? The M11, that is, I want to say, like the highest DPS pistol in the game. I love it though. All right, let's jump over to you, Mitch. What would you change about the series if you could change one thing?
Okay, so this is going to be a little bit of a cheat, but it would be rewriting the entire story of Mass Effect 2.
Whoa, okay. Okay, so I know that you know that I agree with you here because we've talked about how it's a narrative departure, but why don't you give everyone else your explanation?
Okay, so outside of the narrative departure of Shepard having to go work for the bad guys, which doesn't make any sense, there's also, to me, the collectors, they don't make any sense within the within the plot structure of the Reapers. Why does Sovereign do all the things he does in 1 if he's got this army of high-tech drones that he can throw away waiting in the wings? Doesn't make any sense. So for me, what I would do is I would focus, make 2 more about bringing the galaxy together. Either doing one of the big missions in 3 as the game, or making it more about the Batarians, either having to try to bring them in and having that fail somehow, which could lead us right into 3 as it was, or something. Your Paragon could be bringing the galaxy together at the expense of Shepard's reputation with the Alliance, whereas Renegade, more Earth-centric, the System's Alliance is all powerful now at the expense of the Council. Just that. Something like that. That was what I would say to could have been, should have been.
Okay, so I've taken heat before too, because I've said that in terms of story, Mass Effect 2 was my least favorite of the original trilogy, and I'm seeing Genesis over here wince in presumably pain. Jen, do you have a comment here?
So the actual physical wincing of pain is because I have glitter in my eye, and so that's where that's coming from. But there is also physical pain in the I love my Dirty Dozen so much. And so if you're changing like the entire storyline, does that get rid of any of the characters that I hold so dear? And so I wouldn't want that aspect of it. But I also know that that's also what a lot of people don't like about Mass Effect 2, is that there's too many damn squad mates. And so it makes it difficult to pick and choose who to take out on missions. And it feels like the entire game is all about gathering these squad mates and doing their loyalty missions. And then, oh yeah, now we have to go fight these collectors. So I get that. I really, really do. I just love my squaddies way too much to ever want to have them leave in any way, shape, or form.
And that's kind of the thing, right? The ensemble is the story of Mass Effect 2. It is the story of Inglorious Bastards. Because that's like, without the recruitment missions, without the loyalty missions, how many missions are there? Like 4, 5? If that. Yeah. We've got the very beginning, Freedom's Progress. I think there's like 4 or 5, the IFF mission,
Horizon, and maybe a couple little drop-in planets every once in a while. But yeah, there's really not a whole lot that happens that's not specifically squadmate related.
All right. Now, I know that our patrons here have thoughts on this. I'm going to open it up. And please don't try to rip out mine or Mitch's throat immediately. But what are you guys thinking about this? You know, that Mass Effect 2's story would just be rewritten entirely.
I agree, actually. As far as story goes, it's definitely the weakest of them. In fact, there's almost no story to it, like you guys have kind of alluded to. But the real treasure of Mass Effect 2 isn't the story. It's the character development. It's the combat style. It's all those other things that make Mass Effect great. But the story is certainly lacking, and that's definitely something that I would want to see changed, is having something a little more robust, something with a little more heft to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Karina, how about you? Which one was your least favorite of the original trilogy?
Well, I think it's the first one, just because it's the oldest, and the combat I didn't like. I'm not talking a lot because I think that my idea is gonna, well, you'll understand when you're gonna hear it, but
Ooh, okay. I'm tempted now. I want you to save it, so I'm not gonna press you on that. But yeah, Mass Effect 2, if you took out everything else, it's basically just talking about the Collectors, where they are this smaller threat than the Reapers, because they're a henchman of the Reapers, whereas kind of like in Mass Effect 1, we were interfacing directly with Sovereign, and the culmination of it was against Sovereign. So I get where you're coming from, Mitch. I'm going to be devil's advocate against myself here, and I'm going to say that we should keep in mind that they pumped out Mass Effect 2 in 2 years. 2 years. Mass Effect 1 came out in 2007. Mass Effect 2 came out in 2009. How long has it been? 8 years since Andromeda? So, yeah, I think that they probably may have gone for something wider. I mean, you could have still done the ensemble thing with an even bigger story. Think about, like, Baldur's Gate 3 length, if they had been given the same amount of time and resources, maybe. So, who knows? I want to hear from one of you. Does anyone here think that Mass Effect 2's story is fine, does not need to be rewritten at all? Retrobot?
Yeah, I'd argue personally that ME2's plot is like pivotal to set up Mass Effect 3, because it gives Shepard the experience going around the whole galaxy, meeting all the council races that he needs, the pre-established relations, because Mass Effect 3 is all about your pre-established relationships from the previous games and how you use those to get more war assets for the war in general. So I'd like, personally, Mass Effect 2 is my favorite, so I'm kind of biased that way, but like I feel like it's necessary for the game to be structured that way, with you kind of jumping all over the place and meeting a bunch of different people, just because it really sets up, we all have to work together for Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, that there's so much world building that happens in Mass Effect 2 that although I can kind of dismiss it as, okay, this is just a recruitment mission, this is just a loyalty mission, how much should we learn about the Genophage, something far bigger than a recruitment or loyalty mission, from Morden's missions alone, or from Grunt's missions too. So yeah, I get where you're coming from with that I might be missing the trees for the forest. All right, well, let's jump forward, because I really want to hear Karina's idea on what you would change for the Mass Effect series.
Okay, I have a lot of pressure right now. So, you know, Retrobot talked about Medigel, and I agreed, because there's got to be rules. It cannot be that easy. It's not interesting when you have something that solves everything. Okay, so there might be something in my blind spot here, but I'm gonna say it. Why does Shepard have to be a Spectre? I feel like that status makes his relationships a bit too easy. he earns the trust of other species too quickly just because of his title. And maybe instead of being the face of the operation, he could work more from the shadows, acting as like the strategist behind the scenes. He could recruit individuals from other species to represent the cause to their own people. That would maybe introduce more challenges to Shepherd as a human and make the journey feel more earned, maybe.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I see where you're going with that, because it is over and over again that Shepherd walks into a situation and is like, I'm a specter. I'm Mr. Yeah. Cool Guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it's convenient. Narratively, it's convenient, like you said, because all of a sudden now Shepherd has access. But it allows, I think I get where you're going with that. It allows the player to not have to think about it, to not have to think about different ways around a barrier, different ways around a problem. So that's a really cool idea about what if you could play through the Mass Effect trilogy not as a specter.
Yeah, and I realize it would be maybe more political that way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You'd have to make these backroom dealings. You'd have to be a little bit of a power broker. Hey, maybe in this version, you would have to deal with the Shadow Broker more.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's cool. Okay, I want to hear what people think about this one. Non-Spectre Shepherd. Jin, I see that you're nodding your head.
So I've never played it this way, but I know that in Mass Effect 2, you can reject becoming a Spectre again, and you don't get reinstated. And so I don't know if that actually changes anything narrative-wise if you do not return to your Spectre status. So that would be interesting to see how that part plays out. And I think it would definitely be interesting to figure out what relationships you could create, how things would be differently if you weren't given this high title right out the gate. You know, being an N7, I understand that kind of needs to be there. You need to have some military or some physical reason that you are being selected, that you are like the one who's out there fighting these Reapers or going on these missions to begin with. But the Spectre status opens up a lot of doors that not other people would have access to. So it's interesting.
It's a really fascinating point, yeah.
If I may, I feel like the Spectre status provides the player with the shield of, well, okay, now I don't have to feel bad about wiping out a room of scientists. Yeah, they were trying to kill me, but I killed them back. But I don't have to worry about investigation. I don't have to worry about court-martialing. I don't have to worry about charges of murder or any of that stuff. I'm a Spectre. I'm above the law. I feel like that's just the easy game way out of having to worry about some of those smaller morality problems.
Yeah, absolutely. It serves its purpose 100%. I do. Now I'm thinking about, like, what if you were such a Paragon Shepherd that you could have the choice of, you know what, keep your Spectre status. I don't want it. I don't want to be some unaccountable, you know, judge, jury, and executioner. I don't want that power. In the words of someone, one of my favorite characters from a certain fantasy series, I don't want it. And 5 points to anyone that got that reference. McQueen. So, you know, what if you were such a Paragon that you could reject it and then make the game harder on yourself? That would be a little bit of a D&D move, wouldn't it? Yeah. All right. Anyone else have thoughts about, you know, non-Spectre Shepherd?
You know, extrapolating on that, it would make the beginning of Mass Effect 3 make a lot more sense. Like, why are you in the brig? And it's like, bro, I killed a lot of people. And they have really got to clean up after me. And so I am like laying low. Like, instead of just like, maybe I blew up the Bahawk system. Maybe I didn't because I didn't know that mission existed.
Why are you in jail? Man, I fucked up for real. They're gonna execute me. They're gonna execute me for sure. I don't have any diplomatic immunity here. Yeah, that'd be kind of funny. That'd be hilarious. Retrobot, what I saw the gears turning in your head here.
Yeah, so like I had a couple thoughts about it. Like, for one, like we don't meet that many specters in the game, really. So like being a specter is like kind of too broad, and you end up defining what it means to be a specter, so you end up kind of just justifying anything you do is like, oh, a specter would do this, but you don't really know, because you meet like maybe two or three other specters in your entire time against the game. I'd just say, like, tell, like, in our modern military, it's like the E4 mafia that our game should have done. It's our lower enlisted guys who are out there actually like getting everything done. So like I don't necessarily agree with Shepard being elevated to some level or being an officer or some specter that's in charge of people, all that, because it's really down to the guys who are on the ground who are getting everything done.
Right. I kind of agree there. Just a small point that the specter status is like an entirely separate rank system where they're like, they don't even have a hierarchy. It's just like a straight line between Spectre and Council. And then at the same time, Shepard is inhabiting this second rank structure within the Alliance. So I think that that might explain a little bit of why Shepard can still be held accountable by the Alliance for their actions in Mass Effect 2. That's why they end up in the jail in Mass Effect 3, because although the Council might not hold them accountable, they still have to play by Alliance rules too, even if they were back from the dead. There's a lot of things that get kind of hand-wavy justifications because Shepard came back from the dead as well. But Magister, I know from our previous conversations that you have a lot of strong thoughts about story elements that are integral to Mass Effect, Spectre status definitely being one of them. What do you think about this idea where you don't have to be a Spectre?
I think it's fascinating. I think it would be cool to see Shepard lean more on his N7 side of things if you don't become the Spectre of the Citadel race at the beginning of Mass Effect 1, or in Mass Effect 2, having the ability to really dive into Cerberus. Like, we were kind of our own like cell when it comes to that, but it'd been interesting if, instead of like reaching out to the Citadel, let's reach out to different cells in the Cerberus organization. That way you get to see the full side of things, not just like, okay, I'm part of Cerberus, but it's only a needs for a must right now. I'm still doing my own thing here. But it'd been more cool to see, like, okay, well, let's see more of the side of what these different programs are doing. Maybe even brushing across a capsule and not realizing that your clone is sitting inside of it. Seeing those different story beats, I think, would have been a very interesting way to expound upon Shepard not just being the Alliance go-to, not just being the Spectre, but also being the Cerberus agent, the N7, the savior of the galaxy.
Yeah, and all of the different kind of bonuses and consequences that might come with that. Like, I can only imagine in that scenario how difficult negotiating peace would be between the Geth and the Quarians without your Spectre status, right? Because you wouldn't have access to a lot of the things leading up to that. But all right, what a fascinating point. Thanks for bringing that up. Let's move over to, so Yukon Cornelius is not here with us in the call. However, he has sent in his thoughts about what he would change in the Mass Effect universe. And I have him over here, and we can go ahead and play these. And for those of you in the call with me, you will want to be able to listen to this by bringing up the stream and then go ahead and listening that way. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a go right now.
If I could make any change to Mass Effect, it would be to go back in time and stop the extended cut from being a thing. I thought the original ending was fine how it was. I think a big part of my satisfaction with the end was that there wasn't much explained that I didn't already take as just understood from my point of view. As it was being explained, I remember nodding along and being like, yeah, okay, I understand. I wasn't ever expecting the conversation with the Catalyst or the Star Child to really stretch beyond explaining my choices to me. The expanded, why me? Why now? Why not the Elusive Man? Why not Saren? I didn't really need all that further explanation. I thought those answers were kind of obvious. The Elusive Man and Saren were both under Reaper control already. They couldn't make that choice. I understood that I was the one that was there to make that decision and to end the conflict. The rest would be on the shoulders of all the survivors. The added content of the extended cut didn't feel like it added a whole lot more context. I remember the first time I was going through it thinking, duh, yeah, I know this already, and feeling like it was just a longer way of explaining what was already explained in the original ending. Taking a million words to explain something that only takes 7. Like most of my responses and explanation on this podcast. Now I accept that I could be misremembering certain points because I haven't played or seen the original since prior to the extended cut release, but I definitely remember being underwhelmed with it after it was advertised to be the cure-all of all that ails us. When I saw the relays turn into scrap metal, I thought, well, the universe is toast. In my eyes, all the squad mates were just going to be stuck wherever they were at. Everyone that survived the final battle on Earth or in its orbit were just stuck in Sol. The next chapter would essentially be rediscovering intergalactic spaceflight. The folks on the jungle planet were now in survival mode. Shepard is dead. The galaxy and its inhabitants are still spacefaring, just stuck in the systems they were in when the relay system went down. No fairy tale ending, just the best possible outcome given the circumstances. The goal was to end the Reaper threat, and by any means, and that was accomplished. There was a cost of victory, and that cost was setting galactic travel back hundreds or thousands of years, depending on your species. And more profoundly, it cost Shepard their life. But now the Reapers wouldn't harvest anyone anymore. That's the goal, right? Mission accomplished. Adding that scene in the perfect destroy ending, where Shepard takes a breath from under the rubble as a way to appease folks that were complaining about Shepard dying, was actually extremely frustrating to me. In odysseys like this, the heroes are always tied to their villains, and one can't be great without the other. It's okay that Shepard dies, driving that last nail into the coffin of the Reaper threat. It made for a fantastic moment of gravity as the trilogy came to a close, and I feel like that rewritten ending, with that last gasp of breath and that false hope that Shepard lives, cheapened that feeling that I felt the first time through.
Okay, wow, that was a really hot take that the extended cut DLC was superfluous, basically, which is what he said in so many words, which is also ironic. that the extended cut DLC didn't need to be there, that he was completely okay with the explanation we were given in the original Mass Effect 3 endings. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I played Mass Effect 3 the day that it came out. And Mitch, you did as well. And I remember those OG endings and being pissed off and being like, what do you mean? That's it? What do you mean? And so I have to disagree with Yukon here because I felt like a lot of what came in the extended cut DLC was not a given. It was not a given that, and by the way, I think we learned later from writers who gave interviews and did post on forums and things that it was never actually intended with any of the endings that anyone would be stranded in their systems. That it was, they assumed they would be able to get back. So perhaps to my point, that Yukon thought that they would be stranded is a gap of communication between the writers and the players in that original ending. So I want to open this up here to you guys. Extended cut DLC necessary or just redundant and kind of ruined your initial playthrough?
So I'm kind of on the fence about it because I do think that there was the Starchild conversation is too long, in my opinion. And the fact that I can't dialogue skip it really bothers me because it takes too long. And so I wish that some of that stuff was cut. It can be interesting, especially the first time that you're going through it and learning all that stuff. But then on subsequent playthroughs, it's just like, I wish that I could get through this because I already know what I'm going to do next. But the extended cut also gave me the final goodbye to my romance option. And I am never going to get rid of those scenes because they mean way too much to me. When Caden is crying and like having to be forced onto the Normandy because he can't let me go, or the one and only time out of the entire OG trilogy that Garrus says the words, I love you, you can't take that away from me.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That came to mind for me too, because, but instead of Caden, I was thinking about Ashley and how impactful that scene is where, you know, the Mago gets flipped. Ashley and Shepard are having that final, you know, like goodbye, and, you know, Shepard's like, go. So it's a great scene. And now I actually cannot remember if it came with the extended cut DLC or vanilla. And as Day here says in chat, the breath scene after the ending happened in vanilla, if he remembers correctly. I thought I remembered that happening in vanilla, but maybe I'm mistaken as well there. It's been so long since I've only played with the extended cut DLC. I haven't gone back to vanilla from there. But I want to open this up to our patrons as well. Mitch, I saw you making certain faces while you were listening to Yukon's thoughts.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Cause day one, those endings were just pick your favorite color, that they had no difference between them. So we absolutely, I feel like, needed the extended cut to the ends just to give the choices their full weight as much as possible, with Shepard usually being dead of one of the three. I remember I did all of that work, and I did it for all three of them, and I spent hours, and I was like, that's it? That's all I get after all of this? It was not fun.
Yeah. I remember feeling like I needed more closure. Like, there needed to be more of a denouement to that story. All right. Anybody else have thoughts about the extended cut DLC, whether or not it was necessary?
I think... You kind of hit the nail on the head there with how it just kind of ends. There's no oomph to the original ending. And I think that having the extended cut definitely gives it a little more. I got to disagree with him hard on that there's no, it doesn't add context. It absolutely adds context to everything you did and everything that will happen after the choice that you made. And I agree with Mitch that the original ending was just pick your favorite color. There's no difference in how the game ends. It's, well, the Reapers are dead either way. So I think having the extended cut definitely adds context and adds depth to your choice of, you know, which of the four choices you decide to make.
Right on. Well, I think it's about time to wrap up, but real quick, Genesis, what's one thing that you would change in the series?
I wish that more of my OG trilogy decisions worked their way into Andromeda. And I'm not talking about like how it would affect the gameplay or anything like that, but Data would still travel people would still be sending messages to their loved ones about little updates of like, this happened and then this happened. And then even if Andromeda was the first game that you played and you're learning about the things that happened back in the Milky Way galaxy, you know, I think that they could have brought in more and more things, even little news updates. The Reapers have arrived in the Milky Way galaxy. We have things that are going on and more story, more and more things that are happening could have been sent as like little news blasts, even if they were just a text-based message, an email that I got to read from back on Earth, or messages from 200 years ago, 300 years ago, 400 years ago, just updating what happened in the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember playing through Andromeda and thinking, like, I was so hopeful that I'd hear something about my beloved playthrough in the original trilogy, or there'd be some kind of option to import Shepard and my decisions, to hear something about it, anything. But again, you know, galaxy far, far away, far in the future, we don't have to talk about it. So what I would change about the Mass Effect series is also including Andromeda, but it's a little bit more meta than that. I know from having spoken with some of the developers who were on that team, just what that process was like. And so if I were to change something about the series, it would have been that the team had more time to actually build the game, and that they had finished the planning stages faster. So what I mean by that is basically, from what I'm aware of, the Mass Effect Andromeda team was in planning stages for so long, deciding things like how many planets would there be, that it really limited the amount of time for them to build out said planets. And so if I were to change one thing, it would have been to give them more time. To give them more time to put out the game that they wanted to put out. And that they wouldn't be on such a harsh timetable. So who knows what would have happened with Andromeda that way. But those are all of our criticisms, our ideas for inclusions or edits to the Mass Effect series. Thank you all for joining me and Genesis again on the Lorecast. And I'm sure that we have stoked a lot of ideas, perhaps angry comments incoming on YouTube or Spotify or Apple, and we want to hear all of them. We want to hear all the feedback. So let's go around the horn and go ahead and tell me what you got going on, and how can people get a hold of you, starting with you, Magister.
I got nothing going on at this current moment in time, but my name is Magister DeVita on the both the Discord as well as the in the Patreon. Feel free to contact me. Current obsessions are diving back into Dragon Age Origins and having a playthrough there, going with a dwarf. Forgot what the underclass is called in there, but that's what I'm currently going. So anyone want to talk about Dragon Age Origins, feel hit me up.
Nice. My first playthrough of Dragon Age Origins, I accidentally made my character who looked identical to Zevran. People were begging me to romance Zevran, which would have been really funny, but I didn't get there. But all right, Andrew, what do you got going on, and how can people get a hold of you?
Busy with work and busy with parenting, and I don't have much time for anything outside of that. People can get a hold of me on the Discord if they want to chat.
All right, sounds great. And Retrobot?
I'm Retrobot. Retrobot on the Discord and Retrobot on Steam. Just playing through the remake of Metal Gear Solid 3. If anyone wants to talk about that, but that's basically all I'm up to right now.
Sweet. Jeff, what do you got going on? How can people get a hold of you?
Not a lot of. Catch me on the Discord if you want to talk Mass Effect or anything else under the handle Superfly440. So.
Right on. Mitch?
So you can find me on the Discord under the psych, that is C-Y-K-E, tag. And you can find my works of the Avengers audio drama on all the major podcatchers. I'm director, writer, and voice of Bruce Banner and the Hulk. So,
and I think there's a couple of other voices who have been on some of those episodes here with us now.
Yes, indeed. Both you and Genesis provided your voices. You played Sam. You played
Jarvis.
You played Jarvis for several episodes, and Genesis, you lend your voice to Captain Ashley Williams in the Captain America episodes.
Auspiciously so, named. Yes.
Yeah, that whole scene is a Mass Effect reference. So yes. So if you go in and listen to it. But yeah, that's it. That's it for me.
All right. So everybody, if you like the Avengers, if you like superheroes, and if you like audio dramas, hell, even if you don't, go check it out. You will listen along and see if you can spot other voices that you know if you listen to other robots radio shows too. All right, Genesis, I know you do some other things here on the side.
I do. I have two other shows, the Two Girls, One Ship podcast, which was plugged a whole bunch in the beginning of this episode. So no need to go through that one again. Nice. And the Cyberpunk Lorecast, everything related to Cyberpunk, from the video games to the anime. And I cannot wait for season 2 of Edgerunners to come out.
Oh, I don't know if my heart's ready, but I'll get ready. I'll get ready for that. All right. And Karina, what do you have going on over your next month or so? And how can people get a hold of you?
Well, I'm a singer. I'm a photographer. I have ferrets. And I'm a fan of Mass Effect. So you can reach out to me on the Discord. My username is Karina CD.
Awesome. Do you ever sing to your ferrets?
No. Oh. I'm sorry.
Maybe they would like that. Maybe they wouldn't like that. I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
They don't like to be bothered. Right on. All right. Well, thank you all for carving the time out to be here. I hope everybody enjoyed our conversation. Genesis and I will be back next week starting a new sub-series of episodes on the lore. We mentioned Paul Grayson before, but I think it's probably about time to get into Paul Grayson's lore and just how much of a crossroads he is for so many different important characters in the series. Until next time, Spectres, we should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.